Mixture, what we call it, it's hodgepodge. A lot of the people who follow Hinduism today, 50% probably don't have a clue what it's about. But they heard from their mother, they heard from their grandmother, their great grandmother, some of the Indian religion. So they could introduce Christian colleges, Christian universities, Christian schools. So there's a slight, as you can see in Africa, the colonization is always predominantly educational institutions. But in India, it already had before the British came, some of the greatest institutions of learning. So they had to dismantle what they think. So because of that, the religion kind of got lost in it. So most people who follow Hinduism in India, there's two schools. One is called Dvaita Advaita. One is called dual, non-dual concept. Now, duality and non-duality are very important in philosophy because duality is relativity. Hot, cold, happiness, distress, loss, gain, victory, defeat, up, down, and all counter thing. Heat exists because it's cold. Cold exists because it's heat. So these are what we call non-absolute concepts. Because in an absolute philosophical concept, everything is one. If God is absolute, then surely all his creation must be absolute. You can't bring non-absolute from the absolute and still have an absolute equation. But, so in India you have one philosophy to say, well, God cannot be, he cannot be two things. He has to be one thing. As soon as you have two things, there's duality. This is their idea. Panjali, so many different Jamis, different philosophies in India, these big philosophies in India. So, what happened in India, the Vedanta itself is done in codes. It's codes. Now these are coming in the form of slokas. They're verses. If you read the Gita, everyone is a verse, which is actually sung. Dharma Shetri, Purukh Shetri, Shamaviri, Yatsara, Mamma Dhamma, Nivas Kaira, Simma Kuruvara, Sangha. So, all those verses, they have vast meanings in them. So they're codes. And what it is that the great philosophers there who are empowered by God, they unwrap those codes. So like the word now, for instance, you got verses in the Vedanta, Tata Brahma Jignasya. Tata Brahma Jignasya means, Tata means now. Now means in this human life, or at this present time that you're in your highest development of consciousness. Brahma Jignasya means understand spirit. Now is the time to understand spirit. In all the other species, they have no facility to understand what is spirit because they're matter. The animals are concerned with matter. The human is the only creature living who's concerned with God. So, the Vedanta in this code is showing that now you're a human, now is the time to search out higher philosophy, search out the mind, search out God. So you see, out of all the millions of species, the human is the only one who searches out God. You don't find cats and dogs getting together and discussing, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity in relationship with religion and philosophy. So therefore, the human, so these verses are, they have vast meaning, but they may be only three words. But they can be elaborate. So what happened was that with the concept of non-duality, that God is non-dual, it's very difficult to understand because first of all, we live in a dualistic world. All of our experience is extracted from the material. We don't know what spirit is. We talk about spirit, but no one's seen spirit. No one's actually experienced spirit. Just like mind. We can't see the mind. We can see the effects of the mind. We can see the effects of intelligence. We can also see the effects of the lack of intelligence. You understand? This is called relativity. In other words, where there's misery, we can understand to that degree what must be happening. So our learning is relative in the material world. It's relative. Therefore, the concept of an absolute being, an absolute energy, in one school of Indian philosophy is that God is just pure energy. That would be also in Buddhism, Mayavadi, the teachings of Shankara. It would be that God is just pure energy without form. It's a little bit like sunshine. But God is pure, unadulterated energy. Now that energy in the Vedanta is described that God's energy is called Brahman. Brahman is the energy that everything rests on. The actual, if you break down the molecular structure of this universe, right down to the subatomic, you would actually come to Brahman. Now, it's a little bit like this, that the sun planet is giving off sunshine. Now, you can't see the sun because of the sunshine. You understand? In one sense. You understand that the sun and the sunshine, in one sense, the sunshine and the sun are one. And yet they're different. So what the other philosophy is in the Vedanta is that God is a person, and from his body, because God's body is unlimited powerful, there's unlimited energy coming from it. So God is the energetic, and the energy is unlimited because he is unlimitedly energetic. Just like you've got energy, and your energy is limited to your body. But God, because he's unlimited, his energy is unlimited. So, therefore, the variety that appears in God's energy is because God is a person and he creates variety. The only people, it's only personalities that enjoy variety. You understand? Just like a tree. A tree is there in the middle of a garden. But the tree is not enjoying the garden. To enjoy the garden, you have to be conscious that I'm in the garden. This is a very beautiful garden. So, therefore, the principle of consciousness is the cause of the variegatedness. You understand that point? Whereas the impersonalists, they say that consciousness has no variegatedness. Therefore, these two philosophies exist in India. One is called variegated energy and non-variegated energy. Now, those who believe in non-variegated energy, they say that because in this material world, variegation is miserable. Duality. In other words, the things that we experience in this world, like happiness, distress, they're negative experiences. They're not positive, they're negative. And they're relative. In other words, how could the spiritual world have relativity? How could it have relativity? How could it have variegatedness? But what they don't understand is that they're studying the inferior variegatedness, which is a reflection of the positive variegatedness. So, their mistake is that they're thinking that variegatedness is the problem. Variegatedness is not the problem. The problem is the negative variegatedness of the insubstantial nature of matter. So in other words, we want to enjoy phenomena. But phenomena itself is limited. So it's not only limited, but it's also inert. Inert means dead, right? So what we do, we try to increase the reciprocation of matter. We try to make matter more reciprocal. to our desires. That is called economic development, advancement, technology, utilization, utility, anything, whatever you want to look at. It's the individual humans and animals to some extent, but particularly humans, trying to increase the possibilities of matter. And that is what we call science, the advancement of science, technology. To try to, just like for instance, you're sitting on cloth, plastic, wood. Now cloth, plastic, wood in a pile in the room. Suppose it was a pile of plastic, a pile of cloth, and a pile of wood. It wouldn't really bring you any kind of pleasure. But created in the form of a chair, it brings you a certain degree of relief, because you can now sit down, feel comfortable. So therefore, philosophers generally, when they look at variegatedness in the material world, they think that it's some sort of substitution for happiness, which is technically what it is, because you're feeling miserable inside. So outside, you try to create happiness by arranging some sort of variegatedness that will make you happy. Cinema, nightclubs, television, cars, whatever, airplanes. These are all, so therefore the philosophers of India, they looked at that attempt to make adjustments within the energy, material energy, and then they decided that this desire for variegatedness is material. But the other philosophy of India is that variegatedness comes from God because he's a person. So he creates all this variegatedness. So there's two types of variegatedness within the material world. There's God created variegatedness and there's man created variegatedness. God created variegatedness is actually a reflection of the spiritual variegatedness that exists in the reality. And that variegatedness is wholesome, it's complete, it's perfect. But the variegatedness that's converted into the material world, it's like having a tree on the bank of a river. When it reflects in the water, the reflection is upside down, it's perverted. Now perversion is the opposite of the real thing. In the material world, the variegatedness is perverted on desire. In the material world, the soul desires to be God. And therefore, he's trying to be master of matter. In order to bring about that mastership, he's trying to manipulate matter. And he's creating all sorts of variegated situations of mastership. He wants to be the ruler of the country. He wants to be the ruler of his house. He wants to be the ruler of his nation, or his job, or his, he wants to rule over matter. So therefore, that type of variegatedness causes actual ignorance. But our philosophy is the Chitya Veda Veda Taka. We believe that God's energy is simultaneously one and different from God. And because God's a person, his energy is all personal. Everything in this creation is personal, because God's a person. So what we say is that in the spiritual world, there is absolute personal variegatedness. And that energy of the spiritual world is fully sentient, fully conscious. The trees are conscious, the ground is conscious, everything's conscious. In this material world, everything is unconscious. Matter is an inert substance, a dead substance. And the thing which tries to create variegatedness within this dead substance is consciousness. Because the nature of consciousness is variegatedness. That's the nature of consciousness. Just like, say for instance, I said to you, stand in the middle of this room for 2 days. After 1 hour, you feel inconvenient. Because there's no variegatedness. You would become bored. After a day, you start to go again. After 2 days, it's going worse. So anything which has consciousness does not like to be restricted in its movement. We are by nature a free agent, because God is the supreme free agent. So we're always looking for freedom. But unfortunately, we're trying to find freedom in an energy which is not free. Matter works on the rules, on the regulations, on the conditions. And therefore, our so-called freedom is manifested in various forms of mechanization. We try to mechanize matter. For instance, we want to fly in the sky, so we get a big piece of metal and create turbine engines and fly in the sky. But if we were really free agents, we could fly in the sky. Why would we need to use metal? Metal is an inferior substance. So in the material world, because of the limited nature of matter, we can't actually experience our real energy. So Krishna consciousness is the study of variegated spirit, the study of God as a variegated personality. And therefore, you'll find that in Indian philosophy, there's these two schools. One is called impersonalists and one impersonalists. The impersonalists tend to negate God, or to dismiss God in any kind of personal way. Or if they do use forms, such as deities, like you talked about idols, if they do use forms, those forms represent an impersonal energy. They don't accept that God is actually a person. Whereas what we say is that we say God is a person, but he's an unlimited person, so he has unlimited manifestation. Just like you're in this room with me, but now you're not with your sister. As long as you're here, you're not there. But God has no restriction, there's no boundaries of space or time. God, the Dvaitama Chityamanada Rantarupam, he has unlimited manifestations throughout his creation. So technically speaking, he has unlimited forms. But those forms, each one of them are different manifestation of moods. You know, mood. When you're in a mood to dance, you might put on a nice tuxedo and go to a ballroom dance. If you're in a mood to play football, you put on a shirt and pants, shorts, and you play football. If you're in a mood to go swimming, you wear swimming trunks. Each mood, you may change your form slightly, because you can't change your actual physical form, but you can change this dead form. So God, whatever he desires, he can manifest different forms to fulfill that desire without any restrictions. So sometimes if God wants to, he can manifest a form of a gigantic nature, huge and bigger than anything in the universe. That's called a universal form. Sometimes he can manifest a form to enjoy the sweetness of love. So he may have a form like Cupid. Sometimes he may want to enjoy as a child, as a brother, as a friend, as a lover. So we believe that God has this unlimited capacity for enjoyment. The only business of God is to enjoy. And to fulfill that enjoying spirit, he can actually manifest himself in billions of forms. But at the same time, his original form is called Krishna. That is the manifestation of his sweetness. So what we do is we take this principle that God created man in his own likeness, in his own image, to a very deep scientific exploration or study of that fact. We are the reflection, we are the small, minute, microscopic energy of God. So we have the same qualities of God in a very minute way.
Do you think there will be a time when the one will be able to feel all the same energy that only seems to be the ability of God to achieve?
You see, it's like saying, if you take a prisoner in a prison, you see, if you say, do you think there's any chance that this prisoner is going to rule Uganda? You see, he has to first get free from the prison. While he's in the restriction of the prison house, his capacity to perfect himself in any kind of material way is very much restricted by the conditions of the prison. Now suppose a prisoner in a high security cell, you know, they put them in what they call an enclosed cell, one person in the cell. How could he rule Uganda? He can't even go out of his own cell. He's stuck in that cell on his own. So therefore, it would be absurd to say that this man was going to rule the country. But having left the prison, so many possibilities are there. So the first thing is we have to get free from the conditions that we're in. At the moment, we are in a state of embarrassment. We are embarrassed by material conditions that are imposed upon us. Birth, old age, disease, and death. These are imposed upon us by nature. You're going to get old, whether you become a PhD, whether you become Mr. and Mrs. Beauty, or whether you become the Queen of England. You're going to get diseased, you're going to get old. And finally, you're going to die. So what is the achievement if you achieve so many material wonders, but you haven't got rid of the problem? The problem is that you are living under very restrictive conditions. And those conditions are being forced upon you. They're alien to you. Nobody likes disease. Nobody likes old age. And nobody likes to die. If these things were our natural conditions, then we would willingly accept them. If they were natural to us, old age would be a pleasure, death would be a pleasure, because we would fully accept. But no, we fight these things because the soul is never diseased. The soul never gets old and the soul never dies. The soul is never born. It is eternal. Consciousness is eternal. So unfortunately, with modern educational systems, they're teaching us that we're the cult. See, ignorance, the material ignorance, is that we are identifying with the external body as the self. And because we're identifying with the external as the self, we are in a prison. It's called imprisoned consciousness, conditional consciousness, designated consciousness. And as long as we're in designated consciousness, we're subject to our conditions. If you're born in an ant body, you behave like an ant. Now you have pigeons flying around here. The pigeons here do exactly the same things as the pigeons in England, or the pigeons in China, or the pigeons in Hong Kong. Because their designation is, you are a pigeon. You behave like a pigeon. Another designation, you are a human. You're an African human. Behave like an African. You're a French human. Behave like a Frenchman. You're an Irish. Behave like Irish. You're English. Behave like Irish. These are actual designations. If you go to England, the English, they like to play cricket. But naturally, you have a lot of cricket, you have a lot of football. They like to sit in pubs. All these generations out, history repeats itself. They're all doing the same old thing, children to children. They're all doing the same thing. You come to another country, they're all doing the same thing. So these kind of things, these are all designated activities. They're not anything to do with the soul. The soul is something beyond matter. Now, unfortunately, there's no science to find out that thing. But unless you find out what you are, you can never be happy. You can never be happy, because as long as you're thinking that I'm matter, you will always think that some material condition will make you happy. See, I put it in a gross example. As long as I think that I'm this, I have to wash it. I have to do something related with that, because I'm thinking on that. So the point is that what we're saying is that you have as much to do with this body as you have to do with this. You're using this as a covering on your body. You're using your body as a covering of the soul.
So how do you supplement the soul without using much of your soul?
Exactly. That's the verb. Therefore you have to, the only way you'll find your soul is if you find God. The only way you'll find God is if God wants you to find Him. So therefore that's why God appears in various types of support. The support In other words, if you want, suppose you wanted to do something, your mother may support you, your father will support you, but you're the one that decides to do it, okay? You say, okay, mom, dad, I want to go to university. Father says, okay, I'll pay his fee, or your sister, or whatever. They're giving you support. So there's God the enjoyer, the controller, the creator, the destroyer, and there's God the support. That support comes in the form of God's variegated energies. He is supporting you with foodstuff, with air, with light, with heat, with money, with so many facilities. He's supporting you. The purpose of His support is that you will actually come to Him. He's supporting you so that you will come to Him. Now what people are doing is they're supporting themselves so as they can become God. They want to become competitor with God. So therefore He makes them ignorant. You want to be my competitor? Then I will always keep you in ignorance. But if you want to be my servant, then God will give you all the support. That's why you have religion, philosophy. You have teachers, you have books. These are all supports. And in Indian language, that's called guru. Guru means one who supports. He supports your effort to go back to God. So God is not, lacking in support. He's holding up this whole planet by His supporting energy. You know how this planet is floating? It's floating by God's supporting energy. You see? Just like when you fly a jumbo. What is the thing that's supporting the jumbo? It's air, ether, aerodynamics. But at the same time, they're very proud that they put one jumbo. Look how many jumbos are floating in space. So many planets, big planets. The Earth planet is only the size of clouds on some other planet. The whole Earth is only the size of some clouds. So therefore, the Earth is very small. So if God can support the whole universe, surely He can support you. So therefore, He gives you philosophy, He gives you religion. He's all the time, He's in your heart. Krishna is in your heart, God is in your heart. He's directing your wanderings. He's seeing. What does He want to do now? Oh, He wants to become a thief? All right, I'll give Him some support. I'll give Him the intelligence to be a big thief. Oh, He wants to become a doctorate in science. I will give Him something here. He wanted intelligence. So He's giving you the intelligence from within the heart. According to man proposes and God disposes. You ever heard that saying?
It was Merton.
Well, man proposes, God supports. Man proposes, God. What is man
disposes?
Huh? Disposes. So when you have a desire, then that is facilitated by God. He's the facilitator. So if your desire is to know God, you're the facilitator. That's why you're here today, hearing about God. If you have a desire, there are many people in the hall. You're the one that can. Isn't that? Not coincidental, because you have a desire. So through me, He's giving you information. Through these books, He's giving you information. Through the devotees. Guru, we have what we call Guru Vaish and Guru Shastra Sadhu. Guru Shastra Sadhu. These are the supports. Guru means teacher. One who teaches by living example, not by talking. Living example. He talks, but he also lives what he speaks. He's called Guru, one who knows God. And then there's Shastra, the scriptures, and Sadhu means other holy men. They also give support. So, this is there. So if you want to know, we have volumes and volumes of books. We can give you more literature you can read for this life. To reach the grave, we will keep you supplied.
You've been at this for 7 years?
I joined the beginning of the end of 6 and I begin of 7.
In philosophy, what have you found out is a hurdle? What has been the hardest thing to overcome?
In philosophy?
To understand.
I don't think there's anything hard about philosophy. I mean, the
no
thing
contradictions
is.
Contradictions,
you see. If you find contradictions, you have to be very careful, because when there's contra, something opposed, you have to find out where the opposition lies. Is it there in the philosophy, or is it there in your interpretation of the philosophy? Many times, contradictions are something that exist in the mind. If a philosophy is absolute, I make this challenge, if it's absolutely true, it has to be perfect in every single statement that it makes. In other words, if we've got 50 books, every single word in every one of those books have to be absolutely perfect, pure, complete, true, in order to have that, authenticity of being absolute philosophy. So we claim that in our books, everything is perfect. That's a big claim. Very good. And if you find one word which is not perfect, then in any absolute philosophy, you must disregard all of it. Because the absolute truth does not suffer from the defects of the material world. There's no defects in absolute philosophy. I don't know if there's sex in heaven. I don't think so. That's not philosophy. How can you make such a... in other words, how can you say, I don't think so? If you have not been to heaven, how do you know it? So therefore, we can tell you what goes on, what sort of sex there is in the spiritual world. We can tell you everything about the spiritual world. It's still, my point I'm trying to make is that philosophy has to be complete. It has to be complete. It has to tell everything about matter that within your possibility of knowing. It has to tell you everything about the spiritual world also. Now obviously, your spiritual world is unlimited. So the degree that you want to understand the spiritual world will be a limited degree because you're in a limited condition. But at the same time, there has to be a very clear outline of what the spiritual world is, what the material world is, and who is the controller of both. So we can answer. If you ask us anything about the spiritual world, we will answer any question you want to ask. We can answer. We can tell you what God looks like, what He does, we can tell you where He lives, we can tell you what His house looks like, we can tell you who He plays with, who His friends are, who His parents are, we can tell you, we can even give you His telephone number. You want to ring Him up? You want to call Him? We can give you that also. You want to know what He eats for breakfast? We can tell you what He eats for lunch, what He does in the evening. He does in his spare time. So on an absolute plane, there is information there as well. Unfortunately, people don't have knowledge of that plane. Therefore, the problem we have, most ideas of God are taken out of this material world, like the Christian concept that because God created the world a long time ago, He must be an old man. But you've seen Christian pictures of God, a lot of times He has a beard. He's some sort of old fellow. But then again, if God gets old, that means time is greater than God. So that's a contradictory statement right away. Because if God gets old, then that means He's subjected to something above it. Time. Time is the thing that causes old age. So if God gets in any way old, then that means He's been subjected to time. So that means time is God. Because if time is making God old, that means time is controlling God. So therefore, they're saying that actually time is greater than God. So that's ludicrous, because time is created by God. How can it be created? Time I am, Krishna says in the Gita, time I am. He is time itself. So how can you get old? God never gets old. He never ages one crumb. So many things are there in different theologies, different philosophies. But if you study Vedic philosophy, you'll be very satisfied. Leader, an intelligent person. You should use your intelligence to get something which is permanent, material things will come and go. There are so many PhDs waiting in the street. It doesn't mean because you've got a big material education that you're going to be able to solve your problems. But our philosophy is that the first thing that a man should learn is he should learn to become independent. Our educational system is to make men independent. Unless you're independent, you are not intelligent. What is the difference between a human and an animal? Is that an animal is dependent, and a human strives for independence. So the educational system is to make us independent. So by becoming this educational system, by getting some degree, and then you go along begging like a dog, someone, give me a job, employ me, otherwise you end up in the rubbish. That's not education, that's training dogs. It's like in the circus, they train dogs to jump to a hoop. So the so-called modern education system is not creating proper understanding of what is independence. Independence means to be free from material conditions. Unless you're free, unless you can control your senses. The highest political science, you wanted to study political science, the highest political science is to control your senses. You know that? The highest political science is to control yourself. Because unless you can control yourself, how can you control a country? He couldn't control himself. So he caused mass chaos. So what we're teaching is that the first principle of education is you control yourself. You're in control. Like we don't take any cigarettes, no tea, no coffee, no meat, no fish, no eggs. We don't watch television, don't listen to radio, we don't associate with women, we don't have sex life, we don't have any form of stimulations of any kind.
Why don't you take tea or coffee?
Because it's caffeine. It induces the mind with various effects. It's a stimulant. So it becomes a dependency. As soon as you have a stimulator, you become dependent on the stimulation.
What about when you eat and you have drugs or that kind of thing that's gotten into your bloodstream? Wouldn't
any of those? Even when we use natural, we should use natural products, herbs and things. But even with healing, in an advanced level, you wouldn't need those things. But if you need to use, you can use. But actually, the biggest healer is fasting. You fast. All animals, when they're sick, they fast. The human is the only one who eats when he's sick. So a lot of these drugs that they take, they're artificial. They're not really curing anything, they're just suppressing the disease. Like if you take antibiotics and things like that, they're not cures, they're suppressives. What they do is they push the thing further into the system. You see, what you call disease, a lot of times, is the actual problem manifesting itself. So that you become aware of the problem. And with a lot of modern drugs, they push it back into you, and it comes out another way. You don't actually get rid of it. So our Ayurveda system was based upon the science of the constitution of the body, how to keep the constitution perfect, so you don't get sick. In my own life, I'm 45 now, and I've never had a problem. I've never had a problem. I never take medicine of any kind, prescription. Because if you live a healthy life, you don't need these things. Nature. And you look at animals, they don't have doctors, medical centers, clinics, big hospitals. You ever seen any animal hospitals? They don't have. They have problems. Everyone has problems, but they nature tends to take care of most of our problems. But not that we dismiss medicine, we use medicine. Naturally. Yeah, you like some breakfast?
Why not?
Yeah, come and take it. Have some breakfast, please. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
Whoa.